Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's begin with our Dakota political junkies. Today, we welcome Denise Ross and Dana Ferguson. Dana from Sioux Falls, welcome back to In the Moment.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. And Denise from Rapid City. Denise, thanks for being here as well.
I'm happy to be with you today.
All right, Dana, let's go ahead and start with you. What's top of mind for you this morning?
You know, we've had a couple stories come up in the last few days following the end of the legislative session. Obviously, looking at the winners and losers of the legislative session, as well as the laws that were put on the books in the past couple of months. But I also decided to take a look ahead toward 2018, thinking about, once again, ballot measures.
Right.
So I thought it was interesting that a group pushing a ballot measure that would legalize recreational marijuana is trying to make a sort of creative argument that as part of that proposal, they want to put additional funds toward teacher pay, obviously a discussion that the state has been having for the past year and a half or more. And they say using excise and sales tax on recreational marijuana could help bring in millions of dollars for teacher pay, which for some who have said the current sales tax is too much, that half-cent sales tax that passed last year, this could be a good alternative.
So how complex is that ballot measure? Has it been, as it starts getting put together, they're just sort of floating the idea of trying to sell skeptical voters on that, or they really dug into what that might look like?
I think they've started. They're still in the very early stages, but they are gaining quite a bit of support. I think they have a few thousand followers on their Facebook group. It is a pretty dense piece of legislation that they're looking to bring, as it deals with various statutes and sets up a tax structure, as you can imagine, that can be a little bit difficult to do all in one ballot measure. But they're optimistic that between the conversation about legalizing medical and recreational marijuana and potentially using some of that funding to help education and law enforcement, that they might have luck in 2018.
Denise, recreational marijuana in South Dakota, does it have legs at this point or not at all?
My sense is not. Not at this time. I think medical marijuana will pass easily, just based on the number of people I've heard, several of them older folks, these aren't the young kids pushing this issue, who've been convinced just by the stories they've heard over the years. But I want to talk a little bit about the teacher pay angle on this. And the interesting thing in Dana's story to me was the head of the State Education Association not just wholeheartedly embracing this education funding and saying, we heard the same thing when they brought in video lottery, that money would go to the schools. And I can't tell you how many people who are genuinely angry that that didn't really materialize, that the money went through one or two steps basically into the general fund. And then the argument is, we appropriate the general fund every year and some of that money goes to education. So it's an easy argument that video lottery money is going to education, which of course doesn't convince any of the people who voted for video lottery thinking it was going to help the schools out, because it didn't really result in any additional money for the schools.
So how did that happen? Denise, give me a little history lesson there. What happened between the
marketing? read the fine print, I guess. And I haven't gone to see the ballot measure to see how they set that up, but it needs to be really specific in its language about how this would be additional, and I think it could be quite complex to make sure that, if they want to fund schools in addition to what they're currently getting, that language needs to be pretty tight, or as we've seen with our fine legislature in this state, they will go around the voters when they don't like what the voters have said.
Denise, is it a different conversation West River with the proximity to Colorado, and do you see the impact of that politically with West River, lawmakers?
I don't hear that come up, and I think the West River lawmakers are probably the members of the legislature who would be the most, just because they're so conservative, the folks who come from out here, I think they would be the most vocal against this recreational marijuana proposal. But, you know, it will be interesting to see. It'll be an interesting kind of barometer on where the voters of South Dakota are. You hear that recreational marijuana is state by state becoming legal, and I heard a story on NPR this week that somebody has discovered stockpiles of marijuana down in Mexico because the drug cartels just can't get rid of the product. And right. So it might have the effect of actually driving down some drug crime. I think that's an argument you could make.
But then when I had a conversation with, and now I'm not going to remember who it was, who said that was causing the uptick in the meth problem. Because the marijuana wasn't moving, which is maybe way too complicated for us to dig in, right now. It's a complex issue, Dana. Are you enjoying sort of digging into it and finding out what lawmakers have to say?
I am. Obviously, there are a very diverse set of opinions on this, ranging from in full support of legalization of marijuana for any use versus being on the complete opposite side. South Dakota could never legalize marijuana, absolutely not. So it's been interesting to talk to different people, and I think I would agree that medical marijuana seems more likely to pass at this point, but it's hard to know how the state's voters could change in the next couple years, who might be showing up at the polls in 2018 to cast their ballots for this. And that also depends on whether or not they can get the signatures to actually put it on the ballot. So it's hard to say, but it sounds like they're really trying to get out ahead of this and make sure that they have a strong set of supporters going into 2018.
So, Denise, here's an interesting question. For people who are trying to put, I think it's interesting, people who are trying to put issues on the ballot now, do they have to do some legwork with lawmakers as well to make sure that the ballot initiative isn't just repealed?
Well, I wonder about that. That's an interesting
thought. There we go. I'm just thinking about that.
There's any way that the legislators who were behind this push to overturn IM-22 would have embraced that measure.
Right.
I think, what concerns me is, if you're going to put a measure on the ballot, we'll just make it a constitutional amendment, because then they can't overturn it. And then we muck up our Constitution with all kinds of stuff that really should be in statute. But it's a defensive measure if you're trying to promote the will of the voters. So that's my bigger concern. We've seen that the legislature, again, on certain issues, is sort of impervious to public opinion. If you look back last year to the teacher pay fight, and Dennis Dugard, the governor, commissioned a poll that showed, it was a huge amount of support statewide for his plan to boost teacher pay, and it still he had to fight tooth and nail to get it passed, and it, for a while, it looked like it wasn't going to pass, so I really don't know if that would be worth folks' time if they were trying to promote different issues on the ballot.
Dana, what do you think? Do you think that at some point folks who are trying to promote issues straight to the voters need to also kind of brush up on their lobbying skills?
I think, unfortunately, they're going to have to. We saw this year that lawmakers essentially decided they weren't in agreement with IM-22. They struck it. They aimed to replace it, but really didn't put back many of the pieces that were in it. And I've heard from some lawmakers that they're considering bringing their own ballot measures. So I don't know how that's going to affect the process moving forward, but it's definitely changed from how ballot measure process worked when it started. And hopefully voters will continue to feel enabled to bring the issues they're not seeing make headway in the legislature and sort of make those decisions on their own.
Dana, lawmakers bringing their own ballot measures, what does that look like?
You know, it's really just quiet rumblings at this point, but there are some lawmakers who didn't have their goals achieved this year in Pierre and are considering bringing a ballot measure along with other retired lawmakers and just South Dakotans who are interested in this process. So I anticipate we will see more ballot measures coming ahead of 2018. And they could range anywhere from guns to ethics to campaign finance to really anything under the sun at this point.
Denise, what do you make of that?
Oh, yeah, I agree with Dana. I think that we've kind of, we've got some very passionate legislators, and, you know, if they don't get what they want, I think they'll find another way to pursue their agenda.
Are there certain issues, Denise, that sort of lend themselves to ballot measure? Are we talking social issues, tax issues? I mean, the complexities of IM-22 would suggest that, you know, far-reaching, complicated reforms are not as well suited for a ballot measure as, you know, something that's, you know, broken down to some more basic parts.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I mean, I would say IM-22 passed, and so it didn't put the voters off. I mean, I was as surprised as anybody, because I thought the typical conventional wisdom is if voters don't understand something, they vote against it. So either they felt like they understood it well enough, or they just liked certain parts of it enough to vote for it. So, you know, I really don't know. I will remind our listeners that South Dakota was the first state to have the initiative and the referendum on the ballot, and so I really hope that's not something that goes away for our state at all. I think it's a great outlet for democracy, and when you have a legislature that does seem to be a little bit out of step with the general population, and I go all the way back to the abortion ban measure that was on the ballot in 2006. That when you were in the Capitol, when that bill passed, it was, boy, people who vote against this are really taking a big risk. But when you got out into the general public and there were, you know, mass protests in the streets against this bill, and it never reached getting close to passing it when it was referred to the ballot, I think that, you know, that tells you there's a little different dynamic going with the rank-and-file voter as there is with the legislators.
Well, from lawmakers looking at ballot issues to lawmakers just bringing bills in the traditional way in the state house, Dana, you want to talk about how that workload is divided and how you dug into that?
Sure. So over the past couple weeks, I've been looking at all the bills that were brought by South Dakota legislators during the legislative session. It came out to almost 400, and in looking at sort of the legislator by legislator load that they brought, it was pretty uneven. There were about 20 who brought more than half of all the bills. Meanwhile, there are about 12 who didn't bring any. And the sense among legislators is that that's not uncommon if you're a first-year legislator. But if you are someone who's a veteran, it's sort of odd not to bring a piece of legislation during your time in peer. So we looked into that a little bit. There were mixed opinions about how much being a prime sponsor on a bill actually matters. So it's been interesting just to hear the back and forth on that, whether it's better to have more regulation, less regulation, and overall I think many people had the sense that it's more important to look at how you vote on other people's legislation and the changes that you make during your time out in peer.
Denise, how do we sort of measure our lawmakers' effectiveness then? Is that part of how we should sort of think critically about who we send to peer?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. But it reminds me of Texas Monthly Magazine used to do this. They might still do it. They would do an annual ranking of the Texas legislators. And the people in that category who didn't bring any legislation and didn't do much, they had a category for them that was called furniture. and I don't remember the other categories, but I think they had five total. But, you know, that's kind of what Dana did here, was went in and looked at, you know, who's really bringing a lot of legislation, who's really not.
Right.
I will say that a big part of a legislator's job is reading the legislation before they vote on it. And that's how I would assess folks, with seeing how big the binders were that they were taking home at night to read through the bills. And there were some who just prided themselves on reading every single bill before it got to their committees or to the floor. And so I think that's a really big piece of work, and boy, reading those bills can be not the most fun reading you've ever had. So it's hard to tough to say, but I think if you look over a span of years, you might get a better picture for who's doing a lot of work and who's maybe not.
Dana, you were there for the session. How about, you know, folks getting up and commenting and talking? Did you just, you didn't probably analyze that, but did you sit back and sort of notice that some, you know, lawmakers are more likely to take the microphone?
I think that is absolutely the case. Part of it comes from there are some legislators whose personality I think just dictates that they're going to stand up on almost every bill and share how they feel about it, for better or for worse. I had another legislator suggest that a better metric for deciding who was a more involved legislator would to be clocking the number of minutes each of them spent commenting in committee or on the floor. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's a little bit tricky, and there are some people who are just long-winded, so I don't know how accurate that would be. But you do notice when you're there quite a bit who talks more, who sits back, and they might be just digesting it or taking in all the arguments on the floor, or they might not be paying attention at all. it's hard to tell. Ultimately, I think my sense is that every voter is going to have his or her own metric for what matters. And in 2018, too, we're going to find out how well these people did and if voters want to send them back for another term.
Right. Denise, how about this notion of bringing a successful bill versus an unsuccessful bill? Is there a risk in bringing something that you know doesn't have a very strong chance of passing, or is that an important part of being able to say to your constituents, you know, I did this work even though I couldn't get it through?
Yeah, well, and I think that's, again, where you want to look at the span of a couple of years and how legislators do overall. You could always tell when I was there when a legislator didn't have their whole heart into a bill, because they would say, I'm bringing this on at the request of a constituent. So sort of like, doing what I have to do. Here's the bill. You guys decide what you want to do with it.
Really?
But, you know, that is part of the service in the legislature. If you have a constituent who feels strongly about an issue and they come to you and they make their case and you're persuaded, you know, that's one way that the voices can get heard.
Dana, as I look at this, and then, you know, the first name that comes up, you can actually click a drop-down menu. ArgusLeader.com is where you can find Dana Ferguson's work. And you can look up your individual legislator and see how many successful and unsuccessful bills they sponsored in 2017. That's just good journalism to provide that for people so, you know, so efficiently.
Yeah, we think so. And you can find out if your legislator is sort of furniture, as we mentioned earlier, or if they're bringing a lot of bills that were successful, unsuccessful, and I'd say take into consideration, too, party affiliation.
Right.
Obviously, if you're a Democrat in the South Dakota legislature, you're going to have a far more difficult time getting your bill passed just due to party makeup in the Capitol. So consider that, and then if you're interested, definitely take the time to go on the Department of Legislative the Legislature's website and look at exactly what the bills were that they brought and passed, because it's interesting and it governs you. So
Right. It's quite a learning opportunity. I know I've learned so much from both of you, Dana Ferguson and Denise Ross. Denise, thanks for being here, and thanks for your insight, as always.
Thank you.
And Dana, thank you as well. You can find Dana's work at ArgusLeader.com.
Thanks for having me, Lori.